Well, so the reports into Savile, the BBC Savile inquiry, we learn, has now been published. So within the next few minutes, we will bring you some of the detail. Lord Hall, the BBC Director General, is due to speak this morning as well. Let me just dip into the BBC News Channel here a second to hear our correspondent explaining some of what's in this story today about Tony Blackburn. Tony Blackburn says he's been sacked by the BBC. Let's just dip into this.
He's not guilty of any inappropriate conduct, and he says he's suing the BBC. What happened in 1971? Well, a young woman called Claire McAlpine, who was 15, went to Top of the Pops on a number of occasions. Her mother rang the BBC to complain that she had been seduced by a celebrity, taken back to his flat, even though she was underage. And she later killed herself. It was widely reported at the time in the News of the World and elsewhere. Dame Janet says that Bill Cotton, who was then the head of light entertainment at the BBC, questioned Tony Blackburn about this because Claire McAlpine's mother had named him as the celebrity in question. He denied it. He was later interviewed by a man called Brian Neal, QC, who was conducting a separate inquiry at the BBC into allegations of payola, corruption, paying DJs to pay records. And Tony Blackburn told Brian Neal that the girls seemed to be a fantasist, that there had been no sexual advances, and Brian Neal thought the allegation against him was an invention. The problem arises with Dame Janet's investigation into this. She says that Tony Blackburn told her in 2013 that he had never met Claire McAlpine, which contradicts what he told Brian Neal many years ago. And he also told Dame Janet that he'd never been interviewed by Bill Cotton. Dame Janet says the documents suggest that he was.
OK, so that's Nick Higham, the BBC's Nick Higham, giving a summary of what's happened in the Tony Blackburn case. Mr. Blackburn denies any impropriety whatsoever. He's released a statement today. We're hearing a lot more of that in the news. So there are two very different stories going on here today. One is about Tony Blackburn, who says he has been sacked by the BBC, given discrepancies, according to him, in his evidence to Dame Janet Smith. Now, this Dame Janet Smith report, you'll hear it referred to as the Savile report, it has been released this morning. And the sequence of events today is that no doubt we will start hearing what's in this report, and then we will hear from Lord Hall, Lord Tony Hall, who is the boss of the BBC, the ultimate boss. He's the Director General of the BBC. And we expect to hear him in about 10:15 this morning. We will bring that to you live in about 5 minutes' time. I can tell you that the top line to this report, certainly one of them, is that the BBC staff, according to the report, knew of complaints against Jimmy Savile, but senior management were not told because of a culture of fear that still exists. And it's the fact that that report says that the culture of fear within the BBC still exists, which will no doubt be subject to commentary this morning. Now, Nazir Afzal is the former Crown Prosecution Service lead on child sexual abuse. He saw the Janet Smith report in advance of its publication, as well as the report into Stuart Hall's behaviour at the BBC, which is also due out today. Good morning to you, Nazir.
Yeah, good morning to you.
Good morning. So you've seen this report. Maybe you can help us understand what the top lines are in it, what it's telling us.
Well, the top lines are that the abuse had been going on for several decades.
By Jimmy Savile?
Jimmy Savile, absolutely. Stuart Hall was also involved. Obviously, I prosecuted Stuart Hall, so I know how much abuse he was involved in. Over that period, people were aware that there was a culture of deference to those who were allegedly the talent, and reputations were protected, and it was in large part because of poor leadership. There were poor processes in place. If you knew that something was happening, you didn't know what to do with the information, or you didn't do anything with the information. Children were not believed, and if they were believed, no action was taken. So what we learn about the BBC is no different to what we know about any other institution, sadly, in the United Kingdom and probably worldwide. namely that children have been abused and continue to be abused, but by those who are meant to be safeguarding them.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the some of the headlines myself in this report now. It says, this is the Savile report, Nazir, it says the youngest sexual assault victim was 8 years of age.
Yes, yeah. I mean, children obviously were 8, 9, 10, 12. There are dozens and dozens of children. It's not just Savile. I mean, obviously, Sewell Hall is also impacted, but there are also allegations of other abuse and harassment by other individuals, some of whom aren't named. Some of them will never be named because we don't know who they were. And people have openly shared their concerns and their expressions of interest, in effect, to explain what happened to them. But the sad thing is that it's not historic. Today, in any institution I can think of, there will be a child that's being at risk of being abused or has been abused, whether it's the church, whether it's schools, hospitals. Institutions have some real lessons to learn in how they deal with child abuse. One of the main things that hopefully will come out of this, and I keep asking for this, is that there ought to be mandatory reporting of abuse. So when somebody in any organisation becomes aware that a child is being abused, they ought to be obliged to report it in order for action to be taken. At the moment, as we've discovered, people are frightened to do so or don't know what to do, and that means that children continue to be at risk.
I thought, sorry for my ignorance, Nazir, you're a former Crown Prosecution Service prosecutor, yeah. So therefore... You know this territory a lot more than I do. I actually thought it was a legal requirement that if you knew a child was in danger, that you have to report it. It's certainly a legal requirement for a doctor to report that,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. There are different requirements for different organisations. For example, only last year they made it mandatory require to report anything about female genital mutilation. There is mandatory, lots of areas in which it's mandatory, but there's no clarity about this particular issue. If you have a child or know that there's a child that's been sexually abused by somebody, there is no obligation on you to report it. That is terrible. That's exactly where we are today. You know, people do it. People do report because they obviously realize it's wrong. But there are large numbers of people and large organizations, sadly, where they don't have this mandatory reporting in place. We need it statutory. We need it to be a law. We need people, therefore, to be held to account when they don't do it. And that's the best way, in my view, that you can protect children.
This Savile report, coming back to that, we're going to hear from Lord Hall in a few minutes' time. It took evidence from more than 700 people. It looked into how much BBC staff knew. It concluded that the staff knew of complaints against Savile, but senior management were not told because of a culture of fear. The key point, another key point, should I put it like that, is that that culture of fear still exists in this organisation to this day. It's the conclusion of that report.
And sadly, it's not atypical. I can point to lots of organisations that have already indicated, you know, schools and hospitals, where people seem to think that by speaking out, there will be consequences to them, rather than actually, if you speak out, you might protect somebody and there will be consequences to those who are abusing. It's what we've got into. For generations, have we not been telling children, be seen and not be heard? Why are we now surprised when we're hearing all the accounts of the abuse they've been suffering in all manner of places? Because we've allowed it to happen. We have failed children.
Between 1959 and 2006, this report, if you are just joining us on the BBC this morning, on Radio Ulster this morning, there's a key report being released about this organisation that I work in, that you listen to every day, about the BBC. It was written by Dame Janet Smith. It was commissioned to look at the culture of the BBC and what happened within the BBC during the Savile era and beyond. It has concluded, among other things, I'm looking at some of the detail with you now, that between 1959 and 2006, there were 72 victims relating to BBC work. The majority of the cases took place in the 1970s. Nazir, without me in any way trying to find an excuse for what happened, because there is no excuse. It's wrong.
No, there's no excuse.
It's abhorrent, and that's obvious.
It's absolutely
Is there any reason why the majority of the cases should have happened in one era, in the 1970s? Was the culture worse then than it is now? Did people think they could get away with it more then than now?
I imagine so. I imagine so. I mean, I watched a program very recently where just a man touching a woman, I felt uncomfortable. Back in the 70s and 80s, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, people were getting away with much more. Harassment wasn't seen as harassment. There was a real power differential. If you were, particularly if you're a male in some responsible role, you felt you could do what you want. You just look at the television from that time and you can see that there was all sorts of things that people were getting away with, they wouldn't get away with now. So yes, we've moved on, and I'm glad we've moved on. Sad thing is that those people who've been abused don't move on. The trauma that they go through often lives with them for life. Some of them have taken their lives. Some of them have certainly, their whole lives have been impacted by what happened to them then. And we have a duty to make sure that it doesn't happen again in the future.
You say you prosecuted Stuart Hall. This report is telling us that there were 21 victims of Stuart Hall relating to his work at the BBC.
That's right. We prosecuted him for 14 victims that came forward. Many of them were from the BBC or worked or in and around the BBC when he was doing it, so Knockout and various other television shows. But, there are more people that have come forward and have given their stories now. And I suspect there are more out there, I'm afraid. What we've learned is that we're only dealing with the tip of the iceberg, not just with Stuart Hall, but with any of the major perpetrators from that time, that there have been dozens and dozens of people who've simply forgotten about it or tried to forget about what happened to them rather than actually, because they realised that nobody was paying attention to them back then. What we have a duty to do now is to make sure that we don't allow this to happen again in the future.
What was the makeup of Stuart Hall that led him to think he could get away with it? If you prosecuted him, what did you see in him as a human being?
I described him as an opportunistic predator. He would always look for opportunities in which a young woman, a young girl, would be alone with him and he would do what he could do with them. And he felt he'd get away with it because of who he was, that nobody would take them seriously. He'd always say it never happened and they would believe it, simple as that. And that's the man we dealt with. Even today, he's been talking about these people being vindictive or lying. And that says something. He spent time in prison for it, and he's come out of prison, and he's carrying
Nazir,
on.
Nazir, I'm going to interrupt you because Dean Janet Smith, and thank you for your time today, Nazir.
My pleasure.